Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI says the achievements of science and astronomy have helped the faithful to better appreciate creation. The Southern African Bishops' Conference accuses Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe of being willing to watch thousands of innocent people die of starvation and cholera as long as he is able to retain power. Benedictine abbot Timothy Wright takes us on the journey from Nazareth to Bethlehem, where Mary was about to give birth to the Son of God. Pope Benedict XVI says the achievements of science and astronomy have helped the faithful to better appreciate creation. Speaking to those gathered in St. Peter's Square on Sunday, the day of the winter solstice, the Pope also greeted participants in events marking the beginning of UNESCO's International Year of Astronomy. Charles Collins has this report.
Pope Benedict XVI on Sunday spoke about the unity between faith and science during his last Angelus address before Christmas. Speaking to pilgrims in St. Peter's Square, the Pope noted the feast of Christmas is connected to the winter solstice, when the days in the northern hemisphere start to get longer again. He said this highlights the fact that Christmas also has a cosmic dimension, in addition to its historic one.
A questo proposito forse non tutti sanno che Piazza San Pietro ha anche una meridiana.
The Holy Father said this is made clear in St. Peter's Square itself, which is also a meridian. The obelisk casts its shadow along a line that runs along the pavement towards the fountain under the window of the papal apartments. And during the Christmas season, it is at its longest of the year. The Pope says this reminds us of the function of astronomy in making out the rhythm of prayer. The Angelus, for example, is recited in the morning, at noon, and in the evening, and with the meridian, which was used in ancient times to identify true noon, clocks were adjusted. Pope Benedict also pointed out that 2009 has been declared by UNESCO as the World Year of Astronomy, and he greeted all those who will participate in various ways in the initiatives for the occasion. The year was chosen because of the 400th anniversary of the first telescopic observations of Galileo.
Tra i miei predecessori di venerata memoria vi sono stati cultori di questa scienza.
Pope Benedict mentioned that many of his predecessors were devotees of science, specifically citing Sylvester II, who taught it, Gregory XIII, to whom we owe our calendar, and St. Pius X, who knew how to make sundials. He said there is therefore a friendship between faith and science, astronomy and faith. The Pope said if the heavens proclaimed the glory of God, then the laws of nature, which over the course of the centuries many men and women of science have helped us to understand better, are also a great stimulus to contemplate with gratitude the works of the Lord. After his discourse, the Pope had words on the coming feast of Christmas.
In today's liturgy, we recall how the Virgin Mary was invited by the angel to conceive the one in whom the fullness of divinity would dwell, Jesus, the Son of the Most High. As we prepare to celebrate his birth, let us not be afraid to say yes to the Lord, so that we may join Our Lady in singing his goodness forever.
He said in these days before Christmas, we should turn our eyes towards Mary and Joseph and learn from them the secret of recollection in order to savor the joy of Christmas. I'm Charles Collins.
Thanks there to Charles Collins for that report. As world leaders and people everywhere express their horror at the rapidly deteriorating humanitarian crisis in Zimbabwe, we, the Catholic bishops of South Africa, Botswana and Swaziland, add our voice to the cries of those who insist that no effort must be spared in ensuring that a political solution to the current impasse is found. These words by Cardinal Wilfred Napier, Archbishop of Durban and spokesman for the Southern African Catholic Bishops' Conference, are the opening words of a powerful statement released on Thursday. In the statement, the bishops urgently call on South Africa to isolate Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe, whom they accuse of being willing to watch thousands of innocent people die of starvation and cholera as long as he is able to retain power. I spoke to Cardinal Napier about the document and asked him to begin by summarizing its content.
I think the main idea here is that we've reached a point in Zimbabwe where it's not a crisis any longer, it's a disaster. And it's a disaster that's man-made, in fact made by one man, and the only purpose for that disaster is he wants to cling on to power. And I think the every interest of the church is in the common good, and I think that's its definition of what good governance and a good government is. It's one that serves the common good of the people and not particular individuals or classes of individuals or groups or whatever. And I think that would be really the basis of our statement, that the common good has been completely left out of this equation in the present impasse, and that millions of people are now at the point of unbearable suffering. So we as church have to take some responsibility in calling for something to be done that's going to make a difference to that situation.
Cardinal, you also expressed your disappointment at the inability of the Southern African Development Community's leadership, including the new South African president, to make any headway. Can you tell us why?
Well, you know, when you hear somebody like the president of Botswana quite clearly saying where the blame lies and who is responsible for that situation, and the rest of SADC just keeps quiet. And if it does say anything, it says both parties are to blame. Now, there's no way that you can put the blame on the party that actually won the parliamentary election, should be now in government, but is being denied that. And instead, it's being told, share with the party that you lost, even though they have no right to those seats. And then, to make it worse, Mugabe, who won the presidential election by default, is given the moral high ground so that he must say what ministries he's going to shed and hand over to the MDC. I think, you know, this is really bad leadership from SADC. And they're supposed to be subscribing to the NEPAD principle of peer review, which means that you look at the way in which human rights are being observed or respected, and you tell your peers where they've gone wrong or where they've gone right. I think it's from that perspective that very poor leadership has been given by SADC. And our president, I think, has really missed the bus, an ideal opportunity to take a firm stand where Thabo Mbeki had resolutely refused to take one. He had an opportunity in a situation that's even much worse now than when Thabo Mbeki first began.
Yes, you're actually calling on South Africa to isolate Mugabe. And you say the South African government does now have the capacity to force Mugabe to go. How?
We have said that before, you know, that we've got a whole intelligence department. And that one of the roles of intelligence is to know where the problem areas are and what the causes of those problems are and what the possible approaches to finding a solution would be. I would therefore, once again, as I stated at that earlier occasion, that our intelligence can advise the government on those areas where pressure can be applied to the Mugabe regime without affecting the general population any worse than it is affected at the moment.
Cardinal, you also say something else that has been murmured in the past, but it hasn't really been revealed to the full. You say that some African leaders, to their shame, have felt it necessary to stand in solidarity with Mugabe against the supposed machinations of former colonial and present imperial powers. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I think every time the question comes up, somebody has to be found to be blamed for the situation in Zimbabwe. And very often it is, initially it was Tony Blair and George Bush. Now it's Gordon Brown and George Bush. But nobody's looking at the actual cause of the problem. And the cause of the problem is quite clearly that there's a man here who is clinging on to power, which at the ballot box he has lost. And then when he loses that and is in danger of losing at the presidential level as well as the parliamentary level, what does he do? He mounts a reign of terror. And that's widely known. I mean, if I know it, I'm sure the South African government and all the other governments know that there was an absolute reign of terror. Anyone who had been perceived to have supported the MDC was prosecuted and persecuted and hounded out of their homes and their positions. If they were teachers, they were hounded out of their positions in the schools because they were perceived to have supported the opposition. Now, you know, if that's going on and you're going to be blaming Tony Blair wasn't there telling those people to vote. They voted because they wanted change. And to use the argument that the colonial powers are the ones that are behind it, I think is quite dishonest.
At the end of the declaration, you openly call on President Motlanthe to stop all collusion with Mugabe. And you also say that you do so in consultation with the MDC and with civil society organizations. Does that mean you've had talks with them?
We have been at various levels in communication with various groups within Zimbabwe, either on visits up there or on visits when they've come down this side. It might not have been at the bishop's level, but there would be agencies of the bishops, like the Department for Justice and Peace, our Catholic Parliamentary Office, the liaison office, and others who would have been carrying on these contacts on behalf of the conference. And they're the ones who would be advising us of what these associations are saying. When I visited up there with a delegation in 2005, we met with trade unionists, civil society, we met with the different church organizations, the Zimbabwe Council of Churches, the Catholic Bishops Conference, and we had a meeting with the leader of the opposition at that stage, Morgan Tsvangirai. And yes, they would have all been saying that the pressures of some kind or another need to be applied to the regime up there so as to bring about a change. And at that stage, it was about the holding of elections and allowing those elections to be free and fair. Now it is quite different. It's worse, the situation. And therefore, I think the imperative on our president to actually become more proactive, finding a solution, is even greater.
Your declaration comes as a very welcome event. What do you hope may happen now?
Well, we're hoping that, you know, it will be taken to heart, first of all, by our government. And then, yes, we're hoping the next thing we're hoping is that it will be heard by the people in Zimbabwe as an expression of solidarity with them, which was one of the things that they asked us when we were up there. Please keep on letting us know that you are in solidarity, that you know what we're suffering, and that you're going to do what you can to bring about an end to that suffering. And thirdly, yes, we are hoping that international organizations, the AU, the SADC, and so on, might at least look at some of the things that we are saying and look at whether they are not the cause of the problem and deal with that cause rather than calling for a government of national unity. I don't know where they come from, you know, and a party has clearly won the parliamentary election and then it's not free to form the government. There's something wrong there. SADC really does need to look more closely at its own principles and how it's applying them in this case.
Cardinal Napier, for those few, I hope, that maybe don't really realise what the people of Zimbabwe have been going through and are going through, would you like, in your own words, to give us a description of the situation there?
I think the cholera has probably highlighted the situation, the plight of the people of Zimbabwe, more than anything else, any other words could have described up to this. A total breakdown in everything, the economy, the health system, the education system, the social welfare system, a breakdown in the supply of fuel, supply of electricity, of water, the most recent, and the necessities of life in very, very short supply. I think that would be a fairly, perhaps even mild description of the situation there. Let me just add a little incident. When a delegation went up on a very fleeting visit earlier this year to Zimbabwe, we arrived at the convent, and when the sister was giving us a lunch, she apologized that they had no bread to offer us because the bakery wasn't able to produce any bread. Now, that's a situation where people had the resources to buy food, which was just not available. And when you get into the rural areas, it's even worse than that.
Cardinal Napier, finally, it's Christmas. Is there any Christmas message or hope that you would like us to broadcast, highlighting the plight of the people of Zimbabwe?
I think one of the things we would like to hear said to the people of Zimbabwe, number one, is that Vatican Radio expresses the solidarity of the whole Catholic community with them in their suffering. Number two, that an expression of our solidarity is our continued prayer for them, that relief will come sooner rather than later. And thirdly, that to the extent that we are able, we will try to help from a material point of view as well. And the last thing to say, of course, is that let's always remember that Christ came as a liberator from all kinds of oppression, not just the spiritual, but also the physical, political, economic, all kinds of oppression. He's a liberator from those. And it's our prayer that as the liberator, he will bring relief to the people of Zimbabwe as soon as possible.
You've been listening to Cardinal Wilfred Napier, Archbishop of Durban and spokesman for the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference. And now, just 3 days from Christmas, Benedictine Abbot Timothy Wright takes us on the journey from Nazareth to Bethlehem, where Mary was about to give birth to the Son of God. And he reflects on the fact that in the mystery of that birth, there is the sense of what it is to love.
It's December. It's leading up to Christmas. It's a time of preparation of our homes, our families, putting up special decorations, getting the food ready for the celebration on Christmas Day and the days that follow. A moment when we renew our friendship with family and friends, perhaps sending Christmas cards, perhaps being in contact via Facebook or LinkedIn or by telephone or email, the wonderful new communication systems that we can make use of, especially at this time as we prepare for Christmas. But there is something more to it than that, because this particular birth is unique and of huge significance for us as we go deeper into ourselves. So easy for us to think by buying presents and having a big feast and enjoying ourselves that is the end of the Christmas season. And I'd like just to share for a few moments another journey which started in Nazareth, which is now in Galilee and part of Israel, where this older man, Joseph, and his beloved Mary set off on a journey to Bethlehem. A journey perhaps of 4 or 5 days. But it's a journey full of significance in a land today, sadly, of tension, of injustice, of violence. And here, all those years ago, we have this solitary couple, with the donkey perhaps, making their way from Nazareth to Bethlehem. In those days too, it was not a country at peace, it was a country under some sense under Roman occupation, with all the negative things that an occupation brings with it. But they made their way across the Vale of Esdraelon, and then up onto the hills of Judea, and through Samaria, and past Mount Gerizim, Mount Ebal, so significant in the Book of Deuteronomy, for the commitment that the chosen people made to this law that God and covenant that God had offered to them, to live in obedience to his will, something they found extremely difficult to do, but nevertheless it was there, celebrated on those holy mountains. And moving over that central ridge, which separates the plain of Israel from the Mediterranean on the one side and the valley of the River Jordan on the other, in cool conditions, perhaps wet, but it's over the rolling hills of Judea, making their way down what is now known as the West Bank, until arriving after 3 or 4 days into Jerusalem, a smaller Jerusalem than today, a Jerusalem still with a proud history, the place where the temple once was, the place of David, an ancestor of Jesus. And after that difficult journey on foot, with Mary sitting on the donkey, with her baby about to be born, they make their way through from Jerusalem to Bethlehem, the city of David. In Bethlehem, they find it difficult to find somewhere to stay and move to some caves on what is the east side of the town where Jesus is born. Caves produce silence, and in that moment of birth there would have been silence, a silence of wonder, but a silence of expectation, a silence that this was a truly unique event. Yes, shortly after the birth, as tradition has it, we shepherds in that area, seeing something had happened, were guided to that place and there rejoiced. And their joy, glory to God in the highest, their joy echoes the joy of all human beings, men and women, young and old, of all nations, at this moment when hope returns, when there is this sign from God that his love now makes the choice so much easier, because in Jesus God has become man. And in that mysterious birth, in that mystery of that unique human being, there is, summarized in a sense, there is a sense of what it means to love, to go out to the other, from divinity to humanity, from one people to another, from man to woman, from parent to child, from grandparent to grandchildren, from neighbor to neighbor, reaching out, not in competition, not in the sense of I'm better than you, but in the sense of love. And hidden in every act of love, every act of true love, is the statement, I accept you as you are. I forgive you for what you may have done to me. And it is in that mystery of God becoming man, with its implication that I accept you as you are and forgive you for what you might have done to me, lies the hope which guarantees our future. Because in that birth, and from that birth, that human, Jesus Christ, becoming Christ in his journey over 33 years until crucified and then rising. But all that is present implicitly in the baby that is born in Bethlehem at the end of that long journey from Nazareth. And it is when we give thanks for that birth on Christmas Day, we remember that that neighbor who is alongside us, young or old, our own language or another, is all encompassed in that one divine act of generous love, which is Jesus Christ, born to save us all. And those of us who profess the Christian faith are by that token privileged to go out and be Christ to our neighbor in forgiveness and in acceptance, in love and in hope. And in that we offer the gift which Jesus brought to us and the reason why we celebrate Christmas, which is that birth marks the start of a new life which we, following his resurrection, will enjoy after our own death. And there is the meaning, because it is based on the gift of the Father to us in order that his love for us can be fulfilled in our being brought back to him, from whom and in whom and with whom we find our own fulfillment. So that is what we give thanks for as we ponder that scene in Bethlehem, and we ponder the journeys that each of us has to make, as Mary and Joseph made that journey from Nazareth to Bethlehem, along those hills, through Jerusalem to Bethlehem. Amen.
That's all from the English feature program today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But before I remind you that we will be back at the same time tomorrow, and that you can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org, I would like to wish you a very happy and peaceful Christmas. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.